Well, good morning. Thank you very much, Ron, Hazel and the team. It's been a fantastic time so far, hasn't it? And I pray that as we spend time looking at God's Word, He'll continue to talk to us this morning. So this morning, as Ron mentioned, we're going to consider how we as a church community, should respond to the fact that we are chosen people. And a few weeks ago when Ian started this series off, he encouraged the speakers to be practical, to try and talk to us as a church as opposed to go through, let's say, theory. So I hope that as we go through this morning, we're going to be thinking practically about what it means to be a chosen people. Now I've selected three television programs to help us this morning. The first one I have to say I have slightly changed the title of. The first one we're looking at is The Strongest Link. Now, you'll know The Weakest Link is that show where you get asked questions, and if you fail, you basically get voted off by your fellow contestants because you are the weakest link. And it's a fairly painful show to be on, I think. We're then going to be going into The Changing Rooms. That show, for those of you who haven't seen it, where you can have two families and they swap over and they basically redecorate each other's houses, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And then finally, one of the shows that used to be my favourite, it's not so good anymore, but we're going to be looking at My Family. Now, My Family, this is a family that is completely dysfunctional, for those of you who have seen it, and normally it's the dad who's the brunt of most of the problems, I have to say. But so we're going to be thinking about these things. We're going to be thinking about The Strongest Link. The fact that we have a complete, unbreakable link with Christ. We're going to be thinking about Changing Rooms. The fact that we should be changing, our characters should be changing as we come closer to Christ and we allow Him to change us. And then we're going to be thinking about ourselves as a family and hopefully what it means to be a non-dysfunctional family and what we should be putting in place for that. I gone wrong? Okay. Verse 12 starts with, therefore, as God's chosen people. What I thought it was important to do was, Ron read through, so I won't read through verses 12 to 17, but I wanted to spend a bit of time at the beginning looking at verses 1 to 4, because I think that's the context that we see here. So let's read verses 1 to 4. If you'd like a church Bible, should have said that earlier, please raise a hand. One will be deposited in you in there. Page 1184 in the church Bible. And whilst they're coming out, let's remind ourselves that Paul wrote this letter to a young church in Colossae. This young church had strong faith, but they were being threatened by false teaching. And there were people trying to persuade them that they should return to some of their Old Testament ways if they wanted their salvation to be secure. And he writes this letter primarily to reassure them of the completeness of their salvation, but also to train them in the ways that they should be living their lives. So verses 1 to 4 of chapter 3. Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory. Now just imagine receiving that and the reassurance that you just see in those first four verses. You have been raised from the dead. Your life is hidden with Christ in God. You will appear with Him in glory. There is no uncertainty in those words, is there? Now we can be confident in our salvation. If we've given our lives to Jesus, we can be confident in our salvation. And verse 3, I think, is absolutely amazing. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. Now, I don't know what picture that puts in your mind. I sort of had lots of different pictures, from being hidden under a duvet to being completely cuddled. But, you know, what we've got is completely hidden with Christ in God. That is not a future promise of something that is going to happen. That is a present reality for those who follow Jesus. Now, planet Earth can be a very lonely place. It can sometimes feel like, can't it, when you are on the Weakest Link show and people are voting you off the whole time as you get kicked in the teeth. You can get let down by people. You can be misunderstood. You can make plans for things and those plans just seem to evaporate, or maybe you just get ignored. But as our lives are hidden with Christ, we can confidently say that I am not the weakest link. I am the strongest link. I've got that strongest link, an unbreakable link with Christ and God. And when he returns, I will appear with him in glory. You know, we sang, didn't we? He makes the weak strong. That's what we are. As fellow citizens in Christ, we are strong. We can be confident in our faith. So let's get a little bit practical here. We are the strongest link, so how should we respond? Well, verse 2 says it, doesn't it? Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Now, if we were a corporate body looking at earthly things, we'd probably be called a company. A company like I work for. Now, the management of companies put in place measures to ensure that the employees in the company are basically focusing on the right things. The modern word for this in our company, at least, is key performance indicators or KPIs. Everything's got KPIs so we can measure what we're doing. So I thought it'd be good this morning just to compare the KPIs, the key performance indicators, of those that set their minds on earthly things compared to Source of Church, who sets its mind on things above. So there we go. We've got four performance indicators that we would use at work. Quality, productivity, absenteeism, and profitability. If we set our minds on earthly things, we would measure how many bad bits we ship to our customer. For every million parts that we ship, how many bad bits did we ship to our customer? For those that are focusing on things above, I would suggest that maybe one of the things we should be looking at, and it's not a numbers thing, what you'll see on the left-hand side is all about numbers. On the right-hand side, it's all about spiritual development of people. But we should be looking for consistent individual and spiritual growth amongst the church members. That's how we measure the performance. Now, I don't mean this in a like a company way. This isn't original, but we should every so often be checking ourselves. Are we going in the right direction with these things? Is God? Are we really setting our minds on things above? Productivity, how much bits we get out from our people. Well, we should probably be thinking, we've got lots of resources and gifts in this church. Are we using them to the best effect? We do an awful lot of stuff here at church. Sometimes we've got to reprioritise and say, well, maybe things should change. Maybe we should change what we're doing a bit. Maybe we've got some new gifts. Maybe we've lost some gifts. But we should be looking to ensure, as we set our hearts on things above, that we're using the best use of the gifts and resources that we've been given. Absenteeism. Time people are away from work. Not throwing sickies, obviously. Now, you could think absenteeism is the time people aren't coming to church. And, well, okay, but I'd actually look at it slightly differently. How do we support those who are struggling? Struggling in their faith. Just struggling with life. That's important, isn't it, as we go through. Ron's already mentioned it this morning, that I think as a church, we tend to sort of go in that direction, but it's an important thing for us to focus on. How do we support those who are struggling? And finally, the bottom line, profitability. Now, I have to say, for those of us who work in private sector and mainly in public sector, fundamentally, that's why I have a job. I'm there to make more money for the company, whether it be in the short term, medium term or the long term, and it doesn't matter what you're doing in the private sector, it sort of comes down to that eventually when you analyse it. Well, I think for sort of a church, we should be measuring how effective is our outreach. Are we seeing people won for Christ? Now, those aren't the only measures, but I thought it was important, a good thing as we sort of set our minds on things above to say, well, what should the focus be? How does that compare to those that are setting their minds on earthly things? So spiritual growth, effective use of the gifts and resources, support for those who are struggling in their faith, and people being saved for the Lord. They're things that we should be focusing on. And I think Paul sums it up well, doesn't he, in his letter to the Philippians. But whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. They are completely different things. So we're going to skip over the what not to wear in verses 5 to 11 and jump straight into the changing rooms of verse 12. So if our life is now hidden in Christ, and therefore we've set our minds on things above, the natural response to that is we should become more like Christ. Our characters will become more like Christ's character. Now, as I was preparing this, I was thinking, what words could we use to describe Christ's character? The first one I thought of was compassion or compassionate, which just happens to appear there in verse 12 as well. Christ's desire to alleviate people's suffering, both current suffering and eternal suffering. We see it time and time again. That's what we as a church, now it's individual, but remember, Paul is writing this letter to the church, to the young church. So he's saying the characteristic that we should see coming out of the church is one of compassion. He also says that the characteristic coming out of the church, as we have seen in Christ, is kindness. Christ freely gave himself for others. He didn't have many things on the church loans register, but he gave freely himself. He didn't tend to say when people wanted to come and visit or wanted his time, he didn't tend to say, go away, I've got better things to do. He gave himself, he gave his time. He didn't always demand his own space. He used his miraculous powers, didn't he, to feed hungry mouths as he fed the 5,000. Christ's heart was one of kindness. It was also one of humility. He didn't look to get his achievements put into the local paper. In fact, completely the opposite. He sent people away saying, don't tell people what you've just seen. Christ was humble to the point where he humbled himself to death on a cross. He was gentle. Even as he was arrested, he didn't look to seek for retaliation. In fact, he rebuked his disciples as they fought with the soldiers that were arresting him. And finally, he was patient. Just ask Peter. He failed him time and time again. But Peter became the leader of the first church. So when Paul says put on these things, he's not saying put on these virtues because they were virtuous. He's saying put these things on because this is Christ. This is the heart of Christ. This is the character of Christ. And you should reflect that in your church life. And these characteristics are bound together with love, sacrificially putting others before ourselves. So we need to ask ourselves at sort of a church, when people see us, when people come and visit, what do they see? Do they see these characteristics? Would they summarise us like that, or would they summarise us, as Mike said 2 weeks ago, or last week, whenever it was, like the lad from the pod who said, are all Christians rich? Is that how we're seen? Well, I hope not, because I hope that they also see the compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness and patience. But I have to say that on a Friday night, when I'm leading with the youth workers, I don't know whether the guys leave here, the young people leave here and say, well, James, he's full of these things. I don't know if that's what flows out of me. But it is important. If we're going to reflect Christ's love to people, then this is how we will be seen by others. Veneers can be pulled back, can't they? We can disguise things for a short period of time, but ultimately the true character of the church will show through. So as a church we look to grow and get closer to Christ, we should be looking to be putting these things on. And our prayer should be that individually and as a church we see God changing us more and more into these characteristics. Now, we're not going to have time to go into this in detail today, but in our prayer care groups, we're using this term series as the discussion points for Tuesday evenings. And maybe that's one thing you could do on a Tuesday evening is say, you know, discuss what it means for us at Saltersford. What does it mean for us to show compassion in practical terms, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience? Now, Paul was a very practical person. He knew the tensions that can exist amongst people. In fact, Paul experienced them firsthand, didn't he? Paul was actually at the centre of quite a few tensions in his life. And family lives can often get affected by short-term tensions. In our house, it's often to do with homework and things like that. And sadly, sometimes those tensions can develop into long-term tensions. Unfortunately, those tensions can sometimes in families become irreversible and irrevocable, and the family life just sort of breaks down. Well, we often refer to ourselves here, don't we, as the church family, and we are a church family. We sing happy birthday to each other. We are a family. And you know, these tensions can be just as prevalent in church families as they can in, say, normal families. Maura and I used to attend the church in Abergavenny in South Wales, and one week they met together as a congregation, and then the next week they split apart, and there were two separate congregations. And it wasn't like the split between Mighton and Saltersford, which was done in a very proper way for the right reasons. It was very painful. And it was as a result of problems that had been festering for years and years within the church. And then just one weekend it came to a head and they didn't meet again as a fellowship. These things can happen in church life as well. So what is Paul's advice? Well, Paul says, bear with one another and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. And he says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom. What good advice that is to churches. Now, some churches have got very sort of structures where all the decisions and the direction are made by the vicar or the minister, maybe with a very small hand-picked team of people. I think at Saltersford, maybe you'll correct me afterwards, but I think at Saltersford we sort of have a sort of more flat structure. Yes, we've got a leadership team, but there's a lot of people in the church here who have got leadership responsibilities, autonomy, and it's all good things and it's all for the right reasons. And I think it's one of the reasons why we do get a lot done. We tend not to drive down too many top-down changes into the church. Just look at what's happening here this evening. You know, we could have said, this is what we're going to do on a Sunday evening, this is a new format, off we go. But we don't. We want to bring people along with it. But that's good. But it also has got risks to it, hasn't it? Because that leads to uncertainty. And uncertainty can lead to anxiety, and anxiety can lead to stress. And stress can lead to division. Now, I've been amazed over the 8 years or so that I've been coming to this church, and particularly in the last 3 years as I've sort of served as an elder, how little what I would call long-term stress there actually is in the church. There is short-term stress, and in some respects, if there wasn't, it could be a sign that churches are sort of stagnating and not moving forward, because as we do try and move together, there are going to be opinions and there's going to be views. And I think that's good, that's healthy. But it's what we do with that, isn't it? And how we handle that really decides whether that's going to develop into a rift and a division, or whether it's going to enable us to move forward by ensuring that we get everybody's views and opinions considered so we can do things in the best way. And I think one of the distinguishing features of this church has been that we don't let things fester. We don't mind having a discussion about it, but we get on, we sort them out, and we don't let them fester under the scenes. And I think if we do, and if you think that is happening, then we need to put our hands up and we need to sort them out quickly. You know, the same day. not just leave it for time to go by. And you know, I know a lot of my failings. I don't know them all, unfortunately, but I know a lot of them. And my request would be, bear with me. Please forgive me for the times when I'm impatient or too forceful in my views, because I know I can be. Bear with me, please forgive me. And I think that should be the starting point, shouldn't it? It says, bear with each other as you admonish one another. If we start with the point that says, I need to bear with others when they don't see things my way, or I need to forgive others, I think that's completely the wrong point. That's completely the wrong starting point. It has to start with yourself. I need to bear with others and forgive others is not the way. Please bear with me. Please forgive me is the way to ensure, as a family, as a fellowship, we won't be dysfunctional, but we will move forward. But when we do need to teach and admonish or rebuke each other, we're told to do it wisely and by letting the word of Christ dwell in us in verse 16. What does that mean? Let the word of Christ dwell in us. When I read that, it sounds like one of those Christian cliches, doesn't it? Let the word of Christ dwell richly amongst you. But what does that actually mean? Well, when I was considered, I think it took us back to Christ's character, to those things that we spoke about before. If we feel the need to rebuke someone, then let's ensure that we do it in a compassionate, kind, humble, gentle, and patient way. And in actual fact, I think if we put those virtues on, what we're going to discover is that when we actually go to have a conversation with someone, a lot of the time our annoyances, our concerns, are nothing to do with biblical issues. It's just to do with the fact that someone's a different personality and we find it hard to cope with. But when we put those virtues on, a lot of the time we'll just say, well, we've got to bear with each other, as opposed to try and look for conflict. But there are times when someone has done you wrong, or when someone is in the what not to wear wardrobe of verses 5 to 11. And then we need to make sure that we're wearing Christ's virtues before we go and talk to them, as opposed to going in both feet first. And when I was thinking about this, I was thinking 4 out of 5 of them is not good enough. You can have all of those things, but if you've got no compassion or no gentleness or no patience or whatever, then it's going to come across all wrong. People are going to get upset and offended and these types of things. And you know, one of the things that I've just learned in a course that I've been going on is that body language, facial expression and tone of voice communicates 90% when we're talking to someone. What we actually say communicates less than 10%. Now, I know you sort of say, well, where does that come out of the passage? But I think it's very practical. If we're talking to people, let's think about how we're talking to them. I mean, I could say, and I'm not a very good actor, so thanks for a fantastic evening. I've had a great time. And just to think, I could have been staying at home and watching the football. And that sort of, I don't know if it sounds whatever, but that's meant to sound positive, you know, because I have had a great evening. But I could say, thanks for a great evening. You know, I couldn't have thought anything better. And just to think, I could have stayed at home and watched the football. Said exactly the same words, but the way we say it, the expressions that we use and that type of thing, has an effect. So as we do talk to people, let's think about how we're doing it. Let's put on those things that Christ has shown us. So let's ensure that Saltersford as a church is a church where we bear with each other and forgive each other. When we do need to correct someone, let's do it in a way that reflects his character. And we can remember, as we said, that we are the strongest link. We have an unbreakable link to Christ. We can be confident. We are hidden in him. We are secure as followers of Jesus. And with that confidence, we can go forward and look to see Christ working. And let's encourage one another to put on those virtues, those characteristics of Christ. Now, just as the musicians come up, I'd just like us to spend a little bit of time in quiet, just reflecting reflecting on, I'll put this one back up, reflecting on those words, reflecting it as a church, if you could, for us as a church, pray that we will be putting these things, these characteristics on, and maybe thinking about someone you need to be bearing with, forgiving, asking for forgiveness, and just spend a little bit of time in quiet, and then I just say a couple more words before we launch into our final song.